listening to Answers for the Family with Alan Cardoza, right here on LA Talk Radio.
Welcome to another edition of Answers for the Family. I'm your host, Dr. John DeWitt, and every Monday from 11 to noon Pacific time, this show will bring you special guests that can inspire, educate, and entertain while bringing answers and options to raising children today and in our constantly changing future. Answers for the Family will address issues such as family crisis, intervention, building self-esteem, dealing with addictions, your health and longevity, and so much more. As I'm sure many of you expected to hear Alan's voice this morning, we are reminded of the reality of what he does when he's not on the air. As a licensed private investigator and crisis interventionist, he gets calls and has to respond quickly, be it locating a runaway, escorting a teen to a specialized program, or retrieving an abducted child. I spoke to him recently and learned that he's been asked to locate a teenage girl whose mother believes she is being exploited by a human trafficking ring. And if that isn't bad enough, with the coronavirus out there, the parents are understandably beyond worried about her welfare. Shows like this grow by listeners spreading the word. Its focus is on kindness, gratitude, and sharing of information to make all of our lives better. You can help by subscribing, leaving reviews, and sharing the show with your social media following. I'm very excited today because we're going to get to talk with Dr. Elizabeth Stanley, and she has an amazing book out right now called Widen the Window, Training Your Brain and Body to Thrive During Stress and Recover from Trauma. She's an associate professor of security studies at Georgetown University. She is the creator of mindfulness-based mind fitness training, MMFT, taught to thousands in civilian and military high-stress environments. MMFT research has been featured on 60 Minutes, ABC Evening News, NPR, and in Time Magazine and many other media outlets. An award-winning author and U.S. Army veteran with service in Asia and Europe, she holds degrees from Yale, Harvard, and MIT. Oh, my uncle went to MIT. Very nice. She's also a certified practitioner of somatic experiencing, a body-based trauma therapy. Let's welcome Dr. Stanley, or is it Liz?
Please call me Liz, and thanks so much for having me today.
I'm so excited to pick your brain and kind of see what exactly the book is all about, especially with these uniquely stressful slash traumatic times with the coronavirus and everybody's life is upside down. For me personally, two little seven-year-old twin girls that aren't in school for the next who knows how long, and that changes everybody's life. And it's not quite the virus itself, but just the lifestyle changes and the small businesses that have been shutting down and all that are just, it's just very stressful. So I think that makes this a very appropriate topic for discussion.
It absolutely is an appropriate topic for discussion. Everybody's lives have been turned upside down, and I'm excited for us to talk today about some concrete ways that listeners can work effectively with stress and anxiety and, you know, all of the uncertainty that coronavirus has brought the world. There are things we can do to help ourselves be more grounded through this, so I'm hoping we'll dig into that today.
Absolutely. It's funny because I'm a chiropractor in Orange County, and we talk a lot about the three different types of stress. You've got the physical, chemical, or emotional stress, and it all ties together. And it's just fascinating that this just happened to be the show that I guest hosted, because it's just, people don't really understand that the chemical and emotional side of stress can really cause a lot of problems. And ironically, because of the things that are happening right now, they tend to try to find security by looking to chemicals like alcohol and cigarettes and things like that to help them have some sort of certainty. But that's actually not going to help anything. But I mean, mentally it might make them feel like they're better, but it's not going to help them physically. But so with the title of the book, let me recall that once again, Widen the Window, Training Your Brain and Body to Thrive During Stress and Recover from Trauma. What is the window that you're referring to?
The window is the window of tolerance to stress arousal that each of us have wired throughout our lives up till this point. And when we're inside our window, our thinking brain and our survival brain can work together as allies and not adversaries. And I'm sure we'll talk about the thinking brain and survival brain in a minute. But the wider our window is, the easier it is for us to function effectively during challenging and threatening and uncertain events, and keep all of our deliberate decision-making and align, and also help us access choice. When we're inside our window, it's much easier to give and receive social support. And so it's easier for us to be really deliberate and intentional so that our behavior matches our values and our goals. And people with wider windows are much more tolerant during times of uncertainty, like right now. They're much more tolerant when life throws them curveballs, like we've all had our lives thrown into upheaval, possibly losing jobs, working from home, all of a sudden having to homeschool, all of these things we weren't expecting to happen. Wide windows have more flexibility in adapting to that. And as I said, when we have a wide window, we can help provide support to others. Everybody's windows can be narrowed over the course of their life. And in the book, I lay out three pathways that let us narrow our windows: childhood adversity, shock trauma events, like a terrorist attack or a natural disaster or a rape, and then everyday chronic stress and relational trauma in our relationships, professionally and personally. But luckily, everybody's windows can be widened, and there are 8 chapters in the book dedicated to helping readers or listeners to the audiobook learn how to widen their window. And I'd love to discuss some of those concrete tools today.
That is very exciting. It's kind of like, and I've seen that a lot, because people that are really just set in their ways and kind of like, this is how it is. And then all of a sudden you throw the coronavirus in there and schools being shut down and some people not being able to leave their houses or go to work. And I mean, it literally turned everything upside down, and the people that have a narrower window don't know how to deal with that. And they just kind of shut down and just don't know how to function. So in your book, you dive deep into the science of stress, trauma, and resilience. Why did you emphasize the science part of it so much?
Well, I come from a background with a lot of chronic stress and trauma myself. And by the time I hit my mid-30s, after I left the Army and I was in graduate school, I had narrowed my window quite a bit myself, and had PTSD, I had depression, I had several physical illnesses after the near-death experience. I was very narrowed at that point. And in the course of widening my own window and then developing the resilience program, FEMFIT, which is used in high-stress situations, I was blown away to learn how much these things were the result of wiring that had happened. It was neurobiology doing what it does. And beginning to understand that and understand how the science of our minds and bodies works helped so much less personally, and helped me understand exactly what the choice points were so that I had some leverage to begin to heal and widen my own window. And I did. And the reason I share so much science, I do it with stories from my life and lives of the men and women I've trained. So it's not super dense and heavy, but the science helps us understand where we are and realize what we can do differently and not take it personally. And especially in a really challenging time like this, understanding how our minds and bodies work can be really empowering.
True. I agree 100%. You also focus a lot on agency and choice. So why is agency such a determining factor in whether we experience stress or trauma?
Well, whether we experience stress or trauma is not up to our thinking brain. So let me quickly describe what the thinking brain and survival brain are so I can answer this question, John. The thinking brain is the part of the brain that controls deliberate decision-making and reasoning and willpower. It keeps us safe by helping us plan and anticipate and remember things consciously and then decide, make choices. And we know our thinking brain is active whenever we hear that inner commentary of thinking or judging going on. The survival brain is the part of the brain that is always happening automatically. It's thinking fast, and it shows up. It does its thinking fast through emotions and stress arousal. It's automatic. It's preconscious. And it's totally geared evolutionarily to help us rapidly appraise threats so we can survive. That's why it's called survival brain. It's not verbal. You don't hear the survival brain in our head like we hear our thinking brain. Our survival brain shows us what it's doing in the way it's making emotions or physical sensations in our body. Importantly,
so is it kind of like the subconscious brain, or the unconscious? Is it kind of like that?
It's the oldest parts of the brain. It's the limbic system in the middle of the head, which controls emotions, and the brainstem and cerebellum, which controls stress arousal and all the basic autonomic functions. And the survival brain is what's responsible for appraising threat in any situation. It's what turns threat on whenever it perceives something to be novel, so new, unpredictable, uncontrollable, and threatening to ourselves. And in the time of coronavirus, it's getting very stressed because this is novel, unpredictable, uncontrollable, and threatening to ourselves, to other people around us that we care for. Because it's all of these things, all of our survival brains right now are getting stressed. And so it's turning stress on. And then we have all of the activation that comes with stress arousal. When our survival brain also perceives us in a threatening situation or a challenging situation to feel helpless or powerless or lacking control, then the stress actually becomes traumatic. And for many of us right now, because we're having to do things we haven't done before, because we are confronting disease that we do not yet know how to work with effectively, especially for people who are working in the healthcare industry right now, this is extremely traumatic. And so the survival brain controls whether we turn stress on. The survival brain also controls whether we turn stress off. And what that means is that to help ourselves get grounded and find stability during this challenging time, we can't just work with our thinking brain to try and resolve it. We have to work effectively with our survival brains so that our survival brains can feel more safe and more stable and more grounded. And when they do that, that's what turns stress off, and that's what turns on all of the recovery functions that help us to widen our window.
Right. And that's the thing that I'm concerned about, too, is with all the stress and all the changes, the survival brain is just like, oh my gosh, we have to try to survive. That just shoots your cortisol levels through the roof, and that weakens your immune system, which makes you more susceptible to the virus or any virus. And so it's just like, how do we get control of this? Because it's setting up the people to get sick. I mean, it's really frightening.
It absolutely is. When we turn stress on initially for the first like 60 minutes, it boosts our immune response. But then, as you said, John, over time, chronic stress arousal, when we haven't turned the stress off, it actually undermines our immune system down to about 70% below our normal baseline. And you're right. That's when we are more likely to get sick. That's when we're more likely to gain weight. That's when we're more likely to have a lot of other problems. So how do we work with our survival brain? That's the most important first step, because there's lots of things our thinking brain can help us with. But when our survival brain gets too activated, then we get outside of our window and our survival brain hijacks. And that's when we do some of the things you said before. That's when we turn to alcohol. That's when we lose our temper quickly at our kids. That's when we start panic shopping and buying 7 cartloads at the supermarket, and start hoarding things. All of that behavior happens when our survival brains are out of control. So the way we work with it, and this is what our decade of research has shown, we did 4 different neuroscience and stress studies with troops before they prepared to deploy to Iraq and Afghanistan to combat. That's a pretty stressful situation, too. And what we showed in our research is that, this sounds super simple, but this is what we found. Where you're directing your attention has huge ripple effects throughout your brain, your nervous system, and your body. And so if we can choose to direct our attention to something that helps the survival brain feel safe and stable and grounded, it will interrupt the flow of more stress arousal, and it will help us turn it off. And this sounds really simple, but it's very easy to do. I have a 5-minute audio exercise you can download from my website to help train survival brains to do this. But just to use an example right now, say someone is getting super anxious about coronavirus and they have the news on all day long. They're constantly, you know, reading social media and reading their newspaper online or listening to the news, you know, on the television. They're wanting to gather more information. And that's what thinking brains try to do when they don't know what's going on, when things are uncertain. They want to gather more information so that they can know what to do. The problem is, the more we are gathering information like that during times like this, the more it is showing our survival brain we don't know what's going on in this moment. It is uncertain. It is unpredictable. So even as we're gathering news nonstop, our survival brain is turning stress on. So one very key thing people can do is to get more conscious about limiting when they are gathering information. So maybe instead of having the news on 24/7, and being online and on social media 24/7, you make choices. I'm going to check for half an hour in the morning. I'll check for half an hour at lunch. I'll check for half an hour after dinner so that you know the current updates. You're staying aware of it, but your survival brain isn't constantly being triggered by news incessantly. That's one thing we can do. Another thing we can do is we can get more exercise, because that helps to extend some of that, all of those stress hormones that we've turned on. And I know it's hard to exercise at home for some people, but even jumping up and down for 10 seconds, 30 seconds, 60 seconds, however long your own physical capacity lets you, jump up and down, get your heart rate going a little bit and your breathing rate going, and then sit down and feel yourself seated and really notice the support of the chair beneath you, holding you in place. Direct your attention to your butt in the chair, your feet on the floor. Those things will help the survival brain come down, and it will release some of the arousal. And we might notice things like a yawn or tingling or twitching. All of those are ways that the survival brain is discharging the activation.
It almost sounds like a meditation type of thing, focusing on the breathing and just being more going more inside and not outside, so that you're kind of getting back and checking in with yourself to be like, okay, I'm relaxed. I got to keep control. And I do a lot of the meditation too, with some different apps. That 5-minute audio, that's at elizabeth-stanley.com. Is that correct?
Yes. Elizabeth-stanley.com. You can get it there. And it's a 5-minute exercise called the contact point exercise. It's the first one in the MFIT sequence. And it helps to train the survival brain to focus on the sensations of contact. And luckily, our bodies are always in contact with something, so we can use contact points everywhere. You know, I use it, not right now because I'm not commuting, but you know, you can use it while you're commuting, your hand on the steering wheel. You can use it while you're sitting on the bus, you know, feeling the bus under your butt and under your feet. While you're standing in line somewhere, you can feel your feet touching the floor. You can use it lying down in bed when you go to sleep at night. And every time we do it, if we do it at least once a day, we are training our survival brain to have this as a refuge point, so that it will, even when things are totally uncontrollable around us, if we direct our attention that way, our survival brain can feel a little more stable in this moment. And that helps us to then bring all of our creative problem solving and thinking brain back online.
That is so true. I think we're going to take a commercial break real quick. So we'll be right back with Dr. Elizabeth Stanley. We're going to talk some more about how to de-stress and get your thinking brain and your survival brain, getting them on the same page.
Hi, I'm Marty Cove. You might remember me from my film roles such as the Sensei in the Karate Kid films and a variety of others. I've done over 100 films and countless stunts in my career, and I've always given 100% physically. As fun as it was, I've had to have multiple surgeries from doing some of my own stunts. With the damage done to my body over time, I needed to find relief from this chronic pain. My passion for health and fitness drove me to find a natural way to combat body and muscle pain without taking medication every day. Teaming up with doctors, detectives, and a compounding pharmacist, we created Marty's Cobra Cove Ultra Strength Pain Relief Cream. Our CBD cream is whole plant extracted and made with high quality amino acids and essential oils that can improve the strength and the absorption. Other CBD's products, well, they aren't like ours. It's the only thing that has been strong enough to knock out my pain. And I'm not the only one. Thousands of other people have benefited from the healing attributes of these products worldwide. So check out our website at www.martyscobracove.com. It's legal, it's safe, and it's 100% effective. So show your pain no mercy.
Founded over 30 years ago to meet the needs of families in crisis, Westshield has continually focused on resolving issues that negatively impact families and businesses. Our signature therapeutic transportation service helps to ensure that adolescents in crisis are safely transported to specialized schools, programs, and treatment centers with unsurpassed experience and success. We are supported by our full-service, licensed investigation agency that has legally, professionally, and compassionately located hundreds of runaways and teens. We are experienced and qualified to help, offering solutions which may include referrals to our international network of top professionals in the fields of educational consulting, psychology, psychiatry, and investigations. Simply put, Westshield Adolescent Services and Westshield Investigations are the best solutions when your family is facing a personal crisis. Call 1-800-899-8585, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. That's 1-800-899-8585, or visit our website at westshield.com. Thank you.
Hello, this is Dr. John DeWitt, and we are back with Dr. Elizabeth Stanley talking about her book, Widen the Window, Training Your Brain and Body to Thrive During Stress and Recover from Trauma, which, as we have mentioned, is very appropriate timing for this discussion. So, many people believe that stress, worry, and anxiety are all different and need different strategies. In your book, you argue against this. Can you clarify that a little bit?
Yes. A lot of people think about anxiety as just a thinking brain phenomenon, that we start worrying about something. And, you know, there is a thinking brain component to anxiety. But anxiety is also an emotion. And stress, worry, and anxiety, all three of those things originate when the survival brain perceives a situation to be threatening or challenging. And then that shows up in the sensations of stress arousal, you know, the rapid heart rate, sweaty palms. It also then shows up in racing thoughts, the worry component, the cognitive component of it. And we can work with it. The problem with anxiety or worry is we tend to think we have to think our way out of it. But that's not going to resolve it. As we were talking about before the break, the way to work effectively with stress is with the survival brain, because it's the survival brain that controls whether we turn recovery functions back on to stop the stress, to turn the stress off. So if you notice that you are caught in a cycle of worry, and that's really common, really, really common right now, because thinking brains don't have enough information to plan and accurately predict what's going to happen. So of course they're going into worry right now. All of our minds are. It's important to recognize that we need to always help the survival brain to feel as stable and as grounded as we can before we let the thinking brain do its thinking. Because otherwise, the thinking brain's thinking is going to be biased by the stress and the anxiety, and we're not going to be thinking clearly. Thinking, willpower, reasoning, creative problem solving, all of those different thinking brain functions
even keeping focused at work. All of these thinking brain functions get degraded when we are in chronic stress or when we're in a traumatic situation. They get degraded with chronic sleep deprivation, and many people are not getting enough sleep right now. They get degraded when we're dealing with a big amount of uncertainty. And that's happening right now. We see that with the market having tanked as it has, with people possibly losing jobs, with people having to cope with new things like homeschooling their kids. So it's very common right now for thinking brains to start a cycle of worry and dread. But if we just stay with the thinking, it's a feedback loop, and it will make our survival brain more anxious. And eventually the survival brain will get so activated, it becomes panic. And then thinking brain goes offline. So the first thing we have to do is to recognize, okay, I'm anxious, I'm worried, I'm stressed, any of those three things, they're all the same. They're just different doorways into the same thing. And help the survival brain interrupt it for a moment. And we can do that, like I said, by directing our attention in ways that help to interrupt it. We can go for a run. We could walk outside in nature and feel the breeze on our face. We could direct our attention to our contact points, touching where we're sitting or lying down. And once our survival brain is a little bit more stable, then it can be helpful to really make a list. What is bothering me right now? And triage, the one that is causing the most stress and worry, maybe that's the one you choose to problem solve and resolve first. And when you do that and you get an effective resolution for that, the survival brain learns, oh, I have choice. Oh, I have power here. I'm not completely helpless. Last week, I'll give an example of this from my own life. Last week, I had been traveling. I came home by car late on Monday. Georgetown had moved to 100% online. So Monday evening, I needed to go to my office and move out of the office for the rest of this semester. I needed to get groceries, and I went to 6 different grocery stores because the shelves were already completely empty. And then on the way home, I got hit. Somebody drove a left turn.
Oh,
I was straight across the intersection. They hit my car. And my car is so old, and I have so much mileage that my insurance company totaled it. And so then I got home and discovered that my internet wasn't working, and I was supposed to be teaching online the next day. So it was like this perfect storm of things. The first thing I did after putting the groceries away so they wouldn't spoil was I did 10 minutes of the contact points exercise, and then I did some gentle stretching. And then I sat down and made a list and realized the first thing that had to happen was getting the internet fixed because I had to teach, and the rest of it I compartmentalized. And I started all these hours on, different tech support phone lines with the internet survivor. And there was actually a problem with the computer too, got all that resolved. And then I tackled the car, and then I tackled the next thing. And in the meantime, I have a big work deadline coming up. I had papers to get back to students. I made the conscious choice. Those things are going to wait. And it was a conscious choice. I'm putting those aside right now. I'm dealing with the one first thing that's causing my survival brain the most stress. And I'm resolving it. And then my survival brain will feel more calm. And that empowers our system. That's how we can begin to work with the thinking brain and survival brain together in an allied way to get through this stressful time. It involves some amount of triage, but we have to start with the survival brain.
Yeah, and that's one of it reminds me of the quote, the journey of 1,000 miles starts with a single step. Like, you can't do everything at once. You just get overwhelmed. You have to say, okay, what's the thing I need to do right now that's going to help me get to where I want to go, but I can't look at the whole thing, because then you just get overwhelmed and just don't want to do anything. For me personally, I had on Monday, I must have been on Facebook pretty much the whole day, and you talked about getting every kind of spin on the story there is. I'm like, I was watching, they were saying that, oh, they're coming out with mandatory vaccine. It's just a secret hidden way for them to kill everyone. And then it was another thing about the stock market, like you were talking about, and how they planned this out, and it's going to go down to about 14,000, then Trump's going to be the hero that rescues everybody. And it's just like, your brain is just like, oh, and then you have to step back, like you're saying, and be like, okay, what kind of control do I have over any of this stuff? Be like, okay, if I don't have direct control over it, all I can do is do what I can do, and all that is going to work itself out. And it's just, it's extremely stressful. But it doesn't, yes, it doesn't have to be.
No, so, it doesn't have to be. It, you know, wherever, yeah, we're directing our attention, even in situations that are entirely out of our control, that are entirely unpredictable and uncertain, we always have the choice of where we're directing our attention, both moment by moment in terms of like noticing how we're being supported by the chair we're sitting in right now, but also in terms of, okay, I can do these concrete things that are right in front of me. And if I focus on accomplishing these concrete things right in front of me, it will walk me through that anxiety. It'll walk me through that stress. This thing, and then this thing, and then this thing. We can slow it down.
Absolutely. I'm actually reading Atomic Habits right now by James Clear. And
yes,
it's a fascinating book because it talks about the associations that we make with certain things and the behaviors that we get into that we don't even realize we're doing, and being able to kind of step back and say, okay, why am I doing this? And there was a gentleman that I think it was how he stopped smoking. And he would say out loud as he was grabbing to smoke a cigarette, he would say, okay, is this the best thing for me right now? Is this healthy? Is this going to make me feel better? And when you say it out loud, then it makes your brain look at it a little differently. And so eventually, I think in like 3 weeks, he stopped smoking because he didn't associate himself as someone that smokes because he wanted to be healthy. And it was just fascinating. So the show is called Answers for the Family, and I wanted to ask some family type questions. So,
absolutely.
Why do parents have such a huge effect on whether their kids experience stress, anxiety, depression, and trauma? And what can parents do to help set conditions for their kids to build resilience?
It's a wonderful question, John. I have several chapters in the book that look at how parents are so hugely influential in the initial wiring of their children's window. And when parents have narrowed windows themselves, either from their own unresolved trauma and their own unresolved chronic stress, or they're dealing with a big loss or uncertainty, that parent narrow window affects the way that their child's window is narrowed as well. So narrow parent windows wire narrow children windows. And understanding that helps parents realize that one of the best ways that they can set their children on a resilient path for their whole lifespan is for parents to focus on making sure that their own windows are wide so that they can help convey wide windows to their children. I talk a lot in the book about the neurobiology of stress and emotion contagion, and those things are going on a lot right now too.
Right.
Stress and emotion contagion are most contagious in our relationships that are with attachment bonds. So between parents and children, or with our romantic partners, if one of those partners or one of those, the parent or the child is stressed, it's much easier for the other person's survival brain to also get stressed too. Stress and emotion contagion are also really common and likely to convey and transmit in relationships with power differentials, like between teachers and their students, or doctors and therapists with their patients, or between a boss and the people that work for them, or between a national leader and their population. That's where stress and emotion contagion can be really contagious too. So parents need to focus on making sure that their own windows are wide, and that is a way to help train the brains and bodies of their children, which are still wiring. We wire all of, right, our brain and body up through adolescence. We want to be, mm-hmm, able to wire that in a in a way that really helps set children on the best path forward. And,
right,
this is a time when the rubber meets the road. I mean, parents are having a lot of contact with their kids right now. Many of them are having to homeschool. And parents are having their own lives completely upended, having to work from home or possibly being laid off, or, you know, not knowing how long their work is going to last. This is an especially important time for parents to be really creating some space for themselves to do self-care. So if you have a co-parent, you know, each of you getting some time each day for taking time to exercise and get enough sleep and down-regulating your survival brain. And, you know, helping it set things up for the kids so the kids have good habits for stress going forward, making sure that they're getting enough exercise and that they're getting enough sleep. We do a lot of recovery while we sleep. It's really important.
That's true. And that's one of the things.
Go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say that I've been a big believer that the kids are always going to mimic what they see you doing and not what you say you should do. Yeah.
Yes. It's definitely not a do what I'm saying, not as I do. They always do what you do. So much of this wiring is unconscious, and especially the habits we develop around stress and coping with stress, that is all wired unconsciously in the survival brain. And survival brains learn that by watching the survival brains around them. If parents aren't getting their own down regulation and recovery, their kids aren't going to be able to wire that either. And so I talk in the book about how to do that and why sort of so many different effects on hormone systems, on brain development, on physical health, all of these things start during childhood, and parents have a big impact for that.
Absolutely. We have a listener question here. The coronavirus quarantines are almost as devastating on the human spirit as the virus itself. My niece in LA just lost her job. She says she won't be able to pay her rent, car payment, and expenses if she has no income. What is she to do with an apartment lease? Just walk away? My sister is struggling about how to help her and feels she should just come home where she is safe and could start again when this is all over. People all over the country are reporting similar stories. I do hope you will specifically address this in the show. I would like to gift them this book if it would lift them out of the depression I see them in. This is Georgiana in Washington. Or maybe it's in Georgiana, Washington.
Can I respond to Georgiana?
I would love you to.
Okay. Georgiana, I am so sorry to hear about this cascade of challenges you're coping with right now. This is a really, really difficult time for you and your family, and I'm sorry to hear that. The first and most important thing is to recognize that you still have choices in the middle of this, and if it feels good for you to go and be with your sister, to give up your current lease because you're having a hard time making the rent, and can go and stay with your sister and be safe and get some time to regroup and recover and give yourself some space to figure out what comes next, that sounds like a really good choice. I know this is happening all over the country, and I know when we are in times like this, everybody gets very focused just on themselves. You are in a real crisis, and your thinking brain is going to immediately want to try and fix it. But if you can give your survival brain a moment and acknowledge this is really, really, really scary and stressful, and then let your survival brain tell you, you have an inner wisdom, and when you acknowledge what the survival brain is really feeling, you'll hear your inner wisdom about what's right, whether that's going to stay with your sister, whether that's getting another job where you are so you can make rent, whether that's taking in someone to help pay rent with you where you are. You'll know in your gut. But first, you have to listen and let yourself just feel how scary it is, because it is. And I'm thinking about you.
Yeah, I think that scary times like this are when you actually do find out who your real friends are, because she could end up finding somebody, a neighbor or something, that's willing to offer a room in their house for her to stay or something. Like, you never know the kindness of people. Yeah, it is. It gets a little selfish when people are in survival mode, but every now and then you'll have those little shining stars come out and you're just like, wow, I never knew this was even an option. And it really can work out well as long as you stay focused internally and not letting all the external stuff stress you out.
That's right. We are wired to connect. And that interaction goes both ways. We were talking a minute ago about how stress and emotion contagion happen. That's when that wiring is turned on in an anxious way and we're sharing our anxiety with everyone else around us. But luckily, that wiring goes the other way. And when we are being calm and self-regulated and grounded, other people around us are picking that up from us too. And that's when we can reach out compassionately to others. That's when we can, you know, connect with others and receive social support, offer social support. It's super important. I talk about 5 window widening habits in the book, and really strengthening our social connections is one of those window widening habits. It's important, especially during challenging times like this, that we stay connected to our networks and that those of us who are in a more grounded, less uncertain place, like I'm not losing my job. I can be more grounded right now and share that to somebody else who might be like Georgiana, losing her job right now and unsure what's happening.
Right. Right. And I, you did give us that one tip. What are some other concrete strategies that the everyday American today can use to widen their window?
So we've talked about social connections, and that's harder to do when we're social distancing, but we can do it by phone. We can do it with video chat. Those in live connections, not just through social media or email or text, actual live connections through social distancing. That's one thing we can do. Second thing we can do is get enough sleep. We need 8 hours every night. We can't just make it up on the weekend. And I know for people who are, especially in the healthcare setting right now, getting 8 hours is really hard, but as much sleep as possible, because we do a lot of our recovery functions when we're getting restful sleep. So that's something else we can do. And most of us aren't having to commute anymore right now, so there is a little more time in the day perhaps for sleep. Third thing is getting enough physical exercise. And that's cardiovascular exercise as well as stretching and some weight-bearing things. All kinds of classes that people can stream online. There's yoga studios that are showing their classes live, you know, online or just on demand. You can get one of the apps that does high-intensity interval training. You don't need any equipment. You do that at home, 10 to 15 minutes. You get a good cardio workout. So that's something else people can do.
That's one of the best antidepressants I say all the time is exercise. Get out there and exercise, and you're, and if you feel bad at first, you'll feel a lot better after.
Absolutely. We can direct our attention to ways to help the survival brain. You know, use the contact points exercise. It's a 5-minute exercise twice a day. That'll make a big difference. And especially in a time like this, we can lower our standards on things that aren't so important. You know, I was talking earlier in our show about triaging, like figure out the thing that is causing the most stress and focus on that first, and then relax pressures you're putting on yourself. This is not the time to have to worry about having the perfectly cleaned house. This is not the time to have to worry about, you know, making sure that the kids are getting to do all of their different extracurriculars. Like, cut yourself some slack. Let the things that are most important take your priority, and then consciously give yourself a break, because this is really, really hard.
It is. And we have one more listener question, actually. This is from the state of Virginia, Adnine, Virginia. I think I'm saying that right. I was mugged and violated 3 years ago while jogging. Oh, my goodness. Near my home. They never caught the man, which has compounded my anxiety. I have to force myself out the door each and every time I leave the house. I have been in counseling, meditation classes, hypnotherapy sessions, but the relief is always short-lived. My question is, can one really recover from something this deep? And if so, what can I do that is different than what I've already done?
I really appreciate that question. And as a rape survivor myself, I feel like I can speak to you directly about this. I know from my own life, from the lives of other women that I've worked with who have also dealt with sexual trauma like yours, it is possible to fully recover from it. But most of the therapies and even most meditation, the way that it's taught in our society, is focusing on the thinking brain first. And that doesn't begin to help our survival brain recover from the corrupted implicit memories that it wired during those traumatic events. It doesn't help us really recover from the memory capsules that our survival brain is still holding from those events. Because for the survival brain, part of us, when we have a cue related to that event show up today, part of our survival brain thinks the event is still ongoing. It requires a different kind of approach. And that's why I focus so much on the survival brain. That's why I got trained in a body-based trauma therapy. So I highly recommend, if you haven't done one of the body-based trauma therapies, go to my website. I have links there to therapists who are certified in those modalities. It's very different from talk therapy. And it will help your survival brain in a very controlled manner to work with just a little bit of at a time and rewire that corrupted implicit memory so that it is completely gone. I know it works. I've done it myself. I've seen it happen in other women. You can go to the website to get those therapists, and there's going to be an online version of MFIT available starting in October. We've just finished filming it. I'm working with a company called Sounds True, and I'll have updates on my website for how you can do the entire MFIT course. In the meantime, please don't be meditating by focusing on your breathing. For those of us who have had big traumatic events, not just rapes, any big traumatic event, our breathing process often gets interrupted, and focusing attention on breathing can actually trigger a flashback. It can trigger all kinds of traumatic responses in those unresolved memory capsules. That's one of the reasons why I've been recommending in our show today that we really focus attention on the butt with the chair or the feet with the floor. That is always a grounding object for our attention for the survival brain, even for those of us who come from big histories of trauma. And I wish you luck in your healing journey.
Yes, very, very much. And the website again is elizabeth-stanley.com, and we'll have that in the show notes, I'm sure. Well, it's I guess I have to say it's about time to wrap things up. I feel like we just started and now it's already almost over.
I do too, John.
I mean, I really appreciate you being on the show. I learned a lot, and it's just so ironic that it happens to be right now with all the insanity going on in the world. And I just am very excited. I am excited to try that meditation technique, focusing on the butt in the chair. I think that's something that's really going to be good. I'm always trying to expand on how to optimize, overall health and things like that. And I just, anything new, I'm willing to see. And I mean, obviously it works, and I'm just excited to see how it works in my particular situation. And I'm just excited, and I just would like to thank you again for being on the show, and I'm sure that Alan is going to plan on having you on the show again in the future.
Thank you so much for a really enjoyable conversation, John. I agree. It feels like it went really fast, and I hope that all the listeners out there are staying safe and healthy. I hope that Contact Points is helpful for you. You can learn more about it and other exercises and other habits and why they work in the book. I hope to be back on the show sometime soon. Thank you so much for having me.
Thank you so much. Now, if you've been wondering if global warming is actually real, then you need to make sure you put us on your calendar and tune in next Monday when we are joined by Dr. Hope Jahren, an award-winning geobiologist and brilliant researcher on this topic. In this interview, Dr. Jahren will share how her new book, The Story of More, explains the current and projected consequences of greenhouse gases from superstorms to rising sea levels, and the science-based tools that could help us fight back. You can also get information about some of the things that I personally have been working with. I've been working with the healthevolutionproject.com. That is an Australian-based supplement company that has ways to help reduce your cortisol levels, which helps reduce your stress, which helps you have a stronger immune system. If you use the discount code Dr. D VIP. That's DRD VIP. You get a 10% discount on whatever you might order. And please visit the archives of past interviews at answersforthefamily.com or subscribe to the show through iTunes, Stitcher, YouTube, Spreaker, SoundCloud, and iHeartRadio. If you like what you hear, please leave a review, and it will help the show reach more people and be greatly appreciated. And the next time you are on Facebook or Twitter, please remember to stop by the Answer for the Family page and check out some of the latest posts. And if you like them, please like them and spread the word. I had a lot of fun on the show today. This is Dr. John DeWitt sitting in for Alan Cardoza, and have a phenomenal day.
You're listening to Answers for the Family with Alan Cardoza, right here on LA Talk Radio.